SoftBank's huge investment in Uber is one step closer. And is this the new heyday for global growth?
It's good times now, so motivate policies now to cement the gains.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Marie Keyworth in for Anu Anand. Good morning. We have some good and some bad news from Uber. Japan's SoftBank is racing ahead in its bid to buy a stake in the company. But in Europe, regulators are hauling Uber over the coals for its massive data breach. The BBC's Mariko Oi reports from Singapore.
It seems Uber's never far from the headlines these days. Last week, it admitted that hackers stole personal details from 57 million customers and drivers in 2016. It originally covered up the breach, and now European regulators are investigating the data theft. One estimate suggests that the attack could cost Uber between $200 and $250 million, which is a big cost for a company that's yet to make a profit. So, a huge investment by Japan's SoftBank could come in handy. About 2 months ago, Uber's board approved the investment, saying the money would fuel its expansion. We didn't know the size or the details of the investment at the time, but today, several media outlets are reporting that SoftBank is trying to buy 14% of the firm at a heavy discount. In fact, nearly 30% less than Uber's most recent valuation of $69 billion. Neither Uber nor SoftBank would make any comments, but if it's true, the shakeup could help bring stability to the firm after a difficult year. In Singapore, I'm the BBC's Marie Koi for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Markets in Asia and Europe are mixed. Japan's Nikkei is little moved, closing down 10 points. In London, the FTSE is up 30 points or 0.4%. The global economy is now growing at its fastest pace since 2010. That's according to a new report from the OECD, a group of the world's 35 largest economies. Not only that, but the growth is being seen in countries across the board. So all good news then. Well, I put that to Catherine Mann, the OECD's chief economist.
So 2017 is really a good year, but, you know, it's not as good as it can get. And policymakers, if they make the right decisions in 2017, will set the stage for better years in 2018 and 19.
And what do they need to do? What would those good policy decisions constitute?
Well, so policymakers around the world are pursuing monetary policy accommodation. That's good. They've also started to use the fiscal instrument. That's good. But they need to do structural issues in order to cement those gains, lead to productivity growth and real wage growth.
And what are the challenges then facing these countries? What could throw this good growth trajectory off course?
Well, frankly, there's a lot of debt out there. Households have a lot of debt and corporations have a lot of debt that exposes them to interest rate increases. We could definitely have a financial shock.
And do you think then that we're out of the dark days of the post-financial crisis era? Have the world's largest economies pulled out of that bad time?
They have pulled out of that bad time. I think that's what we see. But in order to cement that gain, in order to avoid dropping back into the dark days, we need to ensure that these policies are motivated now. It's good times now, so motivate those policies now to cement the gains.
Catherine Mann. British banks have just been put through their paces in a series of stress tests. It turns out they passed with flying colours. Here's the governor of the UK Central Bank, Mark Carney, speaking to reporters this morning.
Despite the severity of the test, for the first time since the bank began stress testing in 2014, no bank needs to strengthen its capital position as a result. The FPC also judges that the banking system can continue to support the real economy, even in the unlikely event of a disorderly Brexit.
So what does this tell us about the state of banking in the UK? Earlier I spoke to the BBC's Theo Leggett.
Well, these are basically war games imposed by the Bank of England on the UK banking sector to see how resilient the major banks are. It models the economy shrinking by 4.7%, house prices falling by a third and the pound crashing, losing 27% of its value. And the conclusion is that the capital buffers that these banks have put together to cushion them against the event of a crisis are adequate, and that would cover them even in the event of what's known as the disorderly Brexit, where Britain crashes out of the European Union without having a deal in place on trade and such like. However, there is a warning in what Mark Carney said as well, which is that if there were to be a disorderly Brexit and a severe global recession, and the banks were to find themselves loaded with another layer of big fines for misconduct, maybe the sector wouldn't be strong enough at that point, so it may have to consider increasing their capital buffers even further.
This is the first time that the banks have all passed. Does this mean that British banking has come a long way since the dark days of 2008?
Well, certainly they've been required to hold greater levels of capital, a greater cushion against the event of a severe downturn. Two of the banks are still weaker than the others. Royal Bank of Scotland, which of course is partly state-owned, failed the test last year. This year it would have failed it, but it took steps earlier this year to increase its capital holdings, and now it's OK. Barclays, British banking giant, of course, was in a similar position.
That was the BBC's Theo Leggett. And if you think you're busy, spare a thought for the air traffic controllers at Mumbai Airport in India. On Friday, they handled 969 flights in a 24-hour period. That's a world record for an airport that operates only one runway at any given point of time. In London, I'm Marie Keyworth, in for Anu Anand, with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.